It's Wednesday, June 29th, 2011, and you're listening to episode 237 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 52 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Pat.
This is still Wayne.
My name's Chad.
And this is Chris.
All right, Chad, so go ahead and explain, what does it mean when he says still Wayne versus this is
still
Wayne?
Still Wayne is when we do a second take, because the first time Wayne goes, what, this is Wayne?
Yep.
This is Wayne, and then
this
when
is
the
Wayne.
Second take, he always says still Wayne.
So,
or third, or fourth.
Third, or fifth.
When
yeah.
you get the 20th anniversary Fear the Boot Trivial Pursuit game, and the question comes up, what does it mean when Wayne says, still Wayne versus this is Wayne?
Or Mikey Mason Fear the Boot Trivia.
Yes, or Mikey Mason
and
Fear the Boot
I
Trivia.
I want to say that in the last Fear the Con, my ego was severely bruised.
I know, because there's
no
Fear the Boot category.
I know. What is
I've even come up with a new category for his trivia game, which is Story we beat to death. And I've come up with plenty of questions.
Yes.
About if you've ever listened to any episode of Fear the Boot, you should know the answer. Fear the Boot, same four analogies or
that's
whatever.
Right.
So anyway, I do want to say two things about Gen Con. I guess actually three. The first thing, so thought one or zero, depending on how I decide to internally number these, is that this year we are going to be down a little bit in staff because of the fact that Pat, John, and I are going to be at Gen Con, but Wayne, Chad, and Chris will not be.
We're going to be playing Left 4 Dead 2.
I'm going to be at a family reunion.
But. Yes.
So which means Chad and Chris will be on Steam, possibly in the same game, and Chad will be playing Left 4 Dead 2.
I will be attempting to try and move left and right and
right.
Forward.
The thing about Gen Con that I keep telling everyone you have to go at least once for is the spectacle. Mm-hmm. And the same way you have to play Left 4 Dead 2 with Chris at least once in your lifetime.
I'm getting better.
I'm glad to hear that.
Would it be mathematically possible to move the other direction? It's funny, Chris, I'm busting your balls. I've never actually played a game of Left 4 Dead 2 with you. I honestly have no idea.
I would say I'm slightly above below average.
I could say. See, I don't know how you are on Xbox. On Xbox, you know, maybe you're uber elite, but yeah, it's
Xbox Live. I'm decent. I'm pretty good there. It's funny because coming on Steam, I understand that okay, I'm a noob and everything, and so when I
Skype just hung up on
even Skype was
Skype
that story.
Skype called bullshit, hung up on him, and I'm not editing this out.
Man, even Skype won't let me talk in this damn show.
Skype's like, I am not gonna let Chris do some kind of crappy apologetic for his behavior. Click. So, Chris, when your game is worse then Skype is architected.
Yeah, no kidding. Skype's like, shut up, noob.
Who knew Skype had good taste?
Yeah, really.
You know,
I know that I'm not that great, so I stay in like you know my own quote unquote safe areas. In other words, I'll just run through the campaigns. I won't try and do anything mm-hmm. that requires a little bit of strategic skill like scavenge yeah. or versus or anything like that because I don't need to embarrass myself more than I already am. And so now I've reached the point where I can go ahead and try, you know, some of the other options within the game that I normally would play on Xbox Live and do pretty well on.
So we played the first campaign. It was me, Chris, Scoot, and Chris's son. On the finale of the campaign, about 30 seconds in after we'd step off the elevator, Scoot and Chris die. Chris's son and I start finishing up the map. I mean, this is the finale. We're talking boss fights and craziness and constant thing, and we're two-manning this. I get a defib, which is, you know, the heart defibrillator. Yeah. Brings a dead guy back to life in the game. Zap Chris up. 30 seconds later, he's dead again. And Chris's son and I have to finish and beat the map without them. Your son is really good, actually.
He actually is very good. You know, and the funny thing was, in that same thing, I kept saying, you know, I'm dying, I'm down. And he comes running up to me, and in typical his fashion, he got there just a little bit too late to where it didn't matter anymore, you know, just like he does when I ask him to do work that's important. After the time that window's passed and I've already went and done it.
Makes
and he
sense.
Comes down and says, yeah,
isn't that how
I
came
that,
into
no?
existence in the first place?
Yeah, really. Well, you know, it's funny, and I love him dearly, but it amazes me that he was the one that made it through the egg because he's so damn lazy, you know, that he just doesn't want to work that hard, but yet he worked hard enough to gnaw through that egg cupboard. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he was spent now, after he ate through the membrane.
Yeah.
This cut has gone significantly different than the first one.
I don't know if it's better or worse. Anyway, back to Gen Con. First off, because of the fact that we are down a little bit in staff, we will be trying to do some press coverage. But as a way of sort of making up for the press coverage we're not doing, while we are not hosting it this year, we are sponsoring a podcast that runs every year at Gen Con, which is called This Just In from Gen Con, or sometimes shortened to This Just In. And in the past, it was done by Paul Tevis, and I don't remember who else. And this year, it's been picked up by Daniel Perez and some other guys, really great guys, and they want to keep it going. What the podcast is two or three times a day, they will get together, record an episode, and then try to very quickly turn around and release it. So if you're not at the con, you can still follow con coverage, hear some of the interviews, get some of what's going on. And I will be linking to that in the show notes.
Yeah, it's not just, woo, we're having fun, Gen Con sucks because you're not here, that's the show. It's they actually pull in, quote-unquote, celebrities.
Yeah.
People like that, and they
a lot of other podcast hosts go on there,
and talk about what's going on.
Yeah, it's well done.
Yeah,
and they talk to people who are working the con too. It's just like, so what are you seeing? What are people saying? What interesting stuff have you done here? Cover in your coverage of the con, and it's basically like an encapsulation of that half day's event at the con.
Right. So I don't know if I will link it in this show's show notes or not, because of the fact that Gen Con's still, what, like 2 months away or whatever?
Just over a month.
Oh, it's just over a month. Yeah. Maybe I will link it in this show notes. All right. But certainly we will link it, if not this show's show notes, then certainly shows that are closer to Gen Con. So if you're not coming to the con, or even if you are, you'll be able to check that out. Now, for those of you that are going to be there on site, we will be doing the Toff Bitch Network again. So there will still be Fear the Boot sponsored games, dinners, get-togethers, beer tastings, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, my God. The hidden...
Even my Battletech game is going to be there, even though I won't be.
Who's running it?
Chris Ings has very admirably picked up the torch on that one, and he is. I've talked to him. He has something very, very fun planned, and it should be pretty good. And plus, he's a Battletech deity in his own right. The way he runs
well, and on top of that, Chris Ings is the man to do it. There are very few people in the world that I think, if I could take me from back in my Battletech heyday, I mean, now I've forgotten so much stuff, but take me from back in my Battletech heyday, I could have devastated anyone in Battletech trivia. I mean, hell, Chris even wrote for the company, Chris Hussey, that is. And Chris Ings probably knows more about the game than I did then. So if there's a man to run the game, that would be it. It is a great paint job, too. He's a badass painter.
Oh, my gosh. Anyway, yeah, that's amazing.
Okay, so we will still be running games and stuff. A lot of the dinners, apparently they're going to do things that may require us to get a head count for reservations and such. So some of the events will be on Con Planner. So if you're coming to Gen Con, I will put a link in the show notes. Once again, maybe not this episode, but certainly next episode. So you guys can get out there, sign up, get your information out there, and also get your head count in for the events that require reservations. But even if you're not doing those events, still sign up on Con Planner because it provides contact lists and stuff through the admin tools. And I believe that's what our Toft Bitch is, for anyone new to Fear the Boot. That's the official Fear the Boot communications hub. But the Toft Bitches will be using those contact lists to know who to ping when a room party or game or whatever is about to go down. So once again, look for all this stuff in the very, very near future, since Gen Con is creeping up on us apparently faster than I had previously realized. Okay, Wayne, you wanted me to talk about something, so do you want to go ahead and at least set it up?
We were out for dinner before, before recording as usual, and the table next to us had a birthday going. And every time this happens, there's this look that comes over your face, Dan. It's this look of dread as you see the people walk over and get ready for it. But then while it's going on, it's just, I don't even know what this look is.
Let me tell you something about my psychology. It takes a lot to make me angry. I honestly do not think anyone, perhaps outside of Chad sitting at this table, has ever actually seen me angry.
I thought you were going to say anybody outside this table who's made you angry.
No.
Except me.
You have all probably seen me highly agitated. I guarantee you've seen me irritated, because I'm irritated from the moment I wake up to the moment I drug myself to sleep. But it takes a lot to make me angry. I mean, like, I could count probably on the fingers of my hands the number of times in my adult life I have been truly outright angry. But there is something that happens in restaurants, and it doesn't get me to the level of anger, but it pushes me to the upper reaches of agitation. It irritates me in a way that everything else in life, which everything else in life irritates me, does not do, which is birthdays in restaurants. And this pushes me to a Pattian level of rage.
I like Pattonian.
Pattonian. It's a purely Platonic rage. It pushes me to that level. And that is the f***ing birthday celebrations in restaurants. Because here's the thing. You're having a birthday. If it's your birthday, meaning you at another table, la-di-da for you, I came in there to eat with my friends or family, to have a nice quiet dinner, to enjoy my food, to have intelligent conversation or even banal conversation, but nonetheless to talk to the people I'm with. And all of a sudden I have to stop my meal because of the fact that you and the five guys that work there, I feel sorry for you, by the way, because I realize you don't have a choice, and every other at your table has to start singing some retarded birthday song, clapping hands and singing to each other, and I have to stop and have my dining experience interrupted so you guys can take over the restaurant celebrating something that has nothing to do with me. Now, why you would think anyone else in the restaurant would care about this is beyond me. You're having a birthday? Great. Have them bring you out the little piece of cake with a candle in it and your family claps for you. Do you go on with your night? Perfectly understandable. Why do you feel the need to interrupt my day because of it? Now, when I was living in Albuquerque, I was working for Ryder Transportation, not the company that does like the little trucks. I'm talking about the company that does
the yellow ones,
the big ones, the 18-wheelers. In fact, at the time, I don't know if this is still true or not, one in three 18-wheelers you saw on the road back in the late 90s, whether you knew it or not, was a Ryder truck. Mm. They did Coca-Cola. Is it Allied or Alliance Food? I can't remember the exact company name. They had all these massive accounts, but they would let them repaint the trucks such that you didn't know they were Ryder trucks. But one in three 18-wheelers you saw was a Ryder truck, and I was working for this company. And they took me to a dinner one day, along with the rest of the company, to a hibachi restaurant. This was the first time I'd ever had hibachi. In the middle of the meal, the entire staff of this restaurant, I'm sitting here eating. I don't even remember what I was eating, but I'm eating my hibachi. And all of a sudden, the samba line of like 10 or 15 Japanese people come out from the back room with a flaming pineapple singing in Japanese. I don't have any idea what the hell they're singing.
Tell me they did
the chopsticks.
Who cares?
They got a flaming pineapple.
They put it down in front of me, continue singing the song, then applaud and walk away. And I'm sitting here with this blank look on my face, looking around the table like, what the hell just happened?
Was it like, your birthday?
Has the Yakuza just decided to kill me?
Oh, what? they didn't do the next best thing is when they put the headband on and they stick the chopsticks in the headband.
Yeah, and give you your last drink of sake and put you on an empty Zero or Kate. Yeah, they weren't headed that direction. No. And I'm like, what the hell just happened? Because this is like the middle of July. For anyone who doesn't know, my birthday is in October. This is the middle of July, and I'm like, what the hell is going on here? And finally, general manager goes, I told him it was your birthday just to screw with you.
That's funny.
And a then flaming, you shot him.
A flaming pineapple.
It wasn't even, like they came out singing happy birthday to the same tune just in Japanese.
It's a special song.
Yes, I had seriously no idea what was occurring. A flaming pineapple, and they're singing a song I've never heard in a language I don't understand. I had absolutely no clue what was going on.
The hibachi ones are the best. We took my sister-in-law years ago to one. Basically, when they put the thing in her head, they tell her it's a sparkler. You know, it's just chopsticks in her headband. And she was really convinced she had a sparkler going on her head.
On her head.
It's funny.
Last time they bluffed me at a bocce restaurant, Chad, I think you were there for
the
ice
hockey.
Yes.
Ice hockey's delicious.
They had a clear cylindrical plastic bottle, like the ones you get ketchup out of in some restaurants. And he was going around saying, oh, who wants sake? And if you said, you know, oh, I do or whatever, he'd say, okay, open your mouth. And he'd like take this squirt bottle, spray this liquid in your mouth
from about 3 to 4 feet away.
Sometimes more than that. Yeah. And so I thought, he was just screwing around. It's just water, you know, whatever. He's just playing around.
It was delicious.
Yeah, until finally he gets to me and goes, "Time for sake." Doesn't even ask me. Starts spraying. I realize it's sake when it nails me in the eye. If you have never had sake in your eye, let's start off with like carbolic acid and work your way down. It was unbelievably painful.
I love this guy personally, besides the fact that he nailed Dan in the eye. His trick was is that he squirted the bottle and he would keep going until you like basically cried uncle, you closed your mouth.
Yeah.
Or it starts pouring out of your mouth.
Yeah,
well, not me, man. Free sake. And he's like squirting. I'm like, chug, chug, chug. And I'm going, keep it going. Keep it going. Chug, chug.
Well, that's
chug.
Where he got me was this is something that I learned from back in my time in junior high and high school.
Chad likes to drink.
That was later.
That was elementary school.
Yeah.
Pat, go ahead and insert whatever joke you want. I was playing a brass instrument. And as a result, I learned how to basically contain a lot of pressure within my mouth.
He played a trombone.
Go ahead, Pat.
He played a trombone.
Nothing?
Good.
You speak slower.
I was having trouble keeping quiet when the whole family squirting you in the eye.
So I'm sitting there, and after it hits my eye, I realize this ain't water, because water does not burn like this. So I kind of move my head around and start catching it in my mouth. And it
God damn it, Dan. Softball you have thrown me this week, I swear to God.
And so it just keeps going and going.
And then you had to like use your finger on the side of your mouth to squirt some.
So my cheeks are like bulging. It's all the way down to back of my throat. I cannot tell you how much sake there was in my mouth, except for the fact that, here we go again, Pat. When it was done, I had to just swallow and swallow and swallow. I mean, it was not like a one gulp. It was like drinking a glass of water, except the entire glass is in your mouth. And by the end of this,
no spitting allowed.
No, none.
And by the end of this, I was freaking blitzed because I had not even been eating yet. He was doing this while he was preparing the food. I was just flipping blitzed. Now, this was back when I had my carry license. I need to renew it. But at the time, I still had my carry license. I had, because this was winter time, what I call my winter gun. You know, people have like their winter and summer clothes. I have a winter and summer gun.
Yeah.
I had a full 4-inch barrel Sturm Ruger GP100 357. All right. For anyone not familiar with guns.
It's a gun.
It's a big, heavy 357 revolver. It was in my coat. I was so blitzed. I had no idea what was going on. I was sitting out in the aisle. We go through this long meal. Because hibachi meals are long meals. I mean, it takes a while for them to cook the food and for you to eat the food and all that kind of stuff. It's a long meal. So we go through this whole meal. At the end of the dinner, I stand up and suddenly kind of realize my jacket is really light. And I look behind me and there is a 357 laying right in the middle of one of the main aisles of the restaurant.
he took his jacket off when he was...
And apparently the gun fell out.
And it fell out of his jacket.
And I never noticed because of the amount of sake this guy had given me.
Either the staff was really, really polite and very open-minded, or nobody, just by grace of God, nobody noticed.
And I don't know how nobody could have noticed. I have to imagine it's just that Japanese are culturally very polite. And so I have to wonder if that was just kind of their thing of they didn't want to disrupt the wah of their restaurant by pointing out there's a gun in the aisle.
I heard a story, and it may have been one of you that told me the story. I'm not sure, but I heard this about it when the last couple of weeks about the Japanese, that a woman was at a park somewhere in Japan, and she left her purse there. She went off. She went back to her hotel and realized that it was gone. But she, for whatever reason, I think she didn't go back to get it till the next day.
Nobody stole it.
She went back to the park and her purse was sitting exactly where she left it.
Japanese
completely
culture.
Untouched because Japanese,
they don't steal.
They find it to be one of the most rude and
deplorable
things that you can do to touch someone else's possessions.
Oh, yeah. Same reason they leave their shoes outside their doors. Like the front doors of their apartments and stuff, and people don't walk by and take them.
Yeah.
There was tons of stories. What was the city in Japan that had the Olympics some years back?
Nagano.
Nagano. During the Nagano Olympics, they're talking about how the vendors and such, when they want to take a break, would just take their vending trays off, like the big, you know, things that they'd carry their snacks and stuff on, just put it down and walk off.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't even think about taking it somewhere.
It's not to say that no one ever steals in Japan.
Right.
It's just not a cultural thing.
Culturally speaking, the same way if you want free refills and paper towels instead of hand blowers to dry your hands in a bathroom, you go to America. In the same way, culturally speaking, in Japan, there is just a predisposition towards a certain kind of behavior. And in this case, it's a very noble behavior. Mm-hmm. It's a very admirable behavior. And in the same way, they were polite enough not to point out the fact there was a gun in the middle of their restaurant for... I don't know what the hell we were going with that story. So role-playing games, right.
So Dan was playing a role-playing game. And he got really drunk,
and in the middle of it,
gun on the floor.
In the middle of it, Pat started singing "Happy Birthday" with a flaming pineapple. And all right, so Chad, you suggested a topic that I think is a great one because of the fact that this is because
it's my topic.
No, I tried not to judge it negatively by the source because that would be the genetic fallacy. But
I mean, in that case, I never have a topic on here.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I just go down my list of ideas. Done it before. Bad idea. Ginger. Done it before. Ginger. Done it before. So, no, Chad, you suggested a topic of picking up the mantle. And what you were getting at, or do you want to say what you were getting at?
Well, you've been talking for the past 21 minutes nonstop, so...
I told you it would be a good rant.
It would be. It was. And a gun story came out of it, no less.
I didn't see that one.
Nobody saw that coming.
All I got to say is
should have.
You give me one more topic, and this is going to be a bonus episode, is all I'm saying. We're at my tolerance of we're barely a regular episode. If we get to RPGs now, you give me one more, and we're a bonus.
So, the topic, though, is picking up the mantle. The idea is that you are running a campaign or you are in a group where you have this longish running campaign, and the game master decides that for whatever reason he can't or he doesn't want to run the game anymore, and you or your group decide that they want to keep going. They want to keep playing that game and that somebody else needs to pick up the mantle. They need to continue running this other person's game. But how do you do that?
Let me start with a more foundational question, just because of the fact that I think answering this is somewhat necessary in framing the discussion. And the question is this. Coming up with reasons why a game master might stop running a game is easy.
Yeah.
They get tired of it. They get burnt out. Real life drama. They leave the group. Whatever the case may be, there's tons of reasons. But here's the question I want to ask in framing this. I tend to at least subconsciously see a particular game as belonging to that game master. It was their plot idea, their NPC's idea, their creativity that lit that fire. Why keep it going? If the GM leaves, why not just say the GM's gone, time to start a new game?
Because the game's good.
I would argue that the main reason to keep it going is that if the players are having a good time and they're invested and they want some resolution, regardless of what happened to the GM... To me, that's all the justification you need to keep it going. If there are still some people that want to finish that story, then by all means, it needs to keep going. You know, of course, obviously, that comes with some inherent risks just because of the fact that you're going to have a different director picking up this project halfway through. But absolutely, I think that it's worthwhile to at least make the attempt. And if it doesn't turn out, well, then, you know, you just say, well... Okay, it's like Aftermath. It just never really happened, even though, you know, it did.
Well, you know, and also there's a big difference between the type of campaigns we do, the short to medium campaigns, versus the long multi-year ones. If you've had 10 years into this campaign and now the GM has to step away, I think a lot of people would be more invested in that campaign to want to step in and do something like this, too.
I asked that question for the reason I said that I think it was necessary to frame the discussion, but I think in some ways... That's actually a sign that the GM did a good job because it's a sign that the game had buy-in from the players and had a level of interest that had nothing to do directly with the GM. Now, of course, the GM deserves a lot of credit for cultivating that and making it happen. But at the end of the day, he created something or she created something that was bigger than they were. And I think that's a sign that you had a great GM. The GM did a wonderful job. And so you've got a character you're attached to or plot you're curious about or a setting you really love. And when the GM leaves or gets abducted by aliens or whatever happens, you decide that... Actually, I decide. It's good time to go mess up some aliens. But you decide that you want to keep it going anyway. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a sign you've got a... The GM did a great job and ought to be proud.
That I completely agree with. But I think that there's a lot of... obstacles to overcome to making it work.
Well, without a doubt.
Yeah. Unless you're running just like a series of modules or the world's longest dungeon, then you have to look at a lot of factors. Does your style of GMing match up? Like Dan and I's style totally different styles. And if I, this current game that I'm running, if Dan were to take it over, would it be the same game? It's like, no, absolutely not. Would that be a problem? And I don't think it would. I think that it would be different.
I think the group has to understand that, though. Yeah. I don't think the question is, would they be different?
Yeah.
I think it's a statement, rather. They will be different.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's no right or wrong. Just because it's different doesn't mean it's bad. It's a matter of what your group tolerance level is.
I also wouldn't want to see, say, Dan try to run your style of game.
Yeah.
If someone's taking over for another GM, you have to realize that they're not the same GM. If they're trying to basically step directly into those shoes and run it the exact same way that they're not as comfortable with, mm-hmm. I don't think anyone's going to be happy with that game.
Yeah.
Least of all the person running it.
Well, and a lot of it has to do with not it's only the style, but it's the style of the game itself and the approach that's being taken. You know, if you're looking at a group that's composed of, you know, a lot of diplomatic-based type characters, and then that GM leaves, you know, and then walks somebody else who really just kind of likes to, you know, have a lot of rolling combats, you're going to run into some issues there as well, because the entire approach to NPCs, problem solving, situations, all of that kind of thing is going to take on a much different tone.
I think part of the issue you're also going to have is the game master ideally had somewhere they were going with all this. Certain NPCs may have unrevealed secrets. The plot may have unrevealed twists. When the game master leaves, you've got one of two problems. If they had notes, are these notes that you can interpret and run with?
Or if they got abducted by aliens and the aliens burned their house down along with the notes.
Well, or let's say it's Chad-style GM. Yeah. They're highly improv. Maybe they don't have any notes. And as a result, you may simply have no idea where they were actually going with the campaign. And so you have to take things in a very different direction without, and this is the hard part for the new GM, without breaking the continuity.
Right.
Because if the game master has hinted at something, sure, you could just say, well, you misinterpreted the hints. But if the game master has revealed things or made hints so obvious, they might as well be revealed.
Even the reinterpreting the hints thing, where it's not major reveals, it's just hints, and the new game master's kind of going in a different direction with it. You do that too much, and it just gets annoying, and it gets immersion breaking. It's just like...
And I think you can temper that a bit if, as the GM, you sit down with players, whether individually or whatever, and talk about, well, what did you and the previous GM do in regards to your character's backstory? And, you know, what were certain events that happened that you felt were, you know, instrumental in this thing? And then ask them, then this would be the critical question, where did you think that this was all going to go? You know, give me some suggestions as to where you thought this might have ended up for your character based off what you had experienced. And try, as that GM, to try and find a couple of different angles in there. Because obviously the player is going to present you with, well, this is how I figured my character was going to end up. You don't necessarily want to pursue that thing, or at least make it seem that you're going to go that way. I mean, maybe eventually you might get there through a different route, but it's good to know at least where the player thought he was going, because then that could certainly give you an indication as to what your predecessor had on his mind.
I think one thing that could be helpful is if the GM is still available, the old GM, just sit down with them, have a conversation. Where are you going with this? Yeah, you don't need to know everything. You don't need to know what did I have planned for each session, but what is the overall story that we were going for?
I absolutely agree, Wayne, that I realize that is a somewhat situational.
If your GM is moving, you're more likely to be able to get a hold of them. If there's bad blood, then
there's
probably.
Exactly.
If he's been abducted by aliens and
injected with bad blood.
If they're available and you're still on good terms, you can have conversations to help that transition. In fact, let's really not just talk about the GM leaving. The issue may be the GM's just burnt out. Mm-hmm. That the GM's not leaving. The GM's still there. The GM's just leaving the GM seat. That they are, in fact, becoming a player.
I'm struggling with this topic in the first place because I'm trying to come up with some kind of a positive way to do this. I wouldn't want to do this. Mm-hmm. I just would not want to do it, period. And I guess my first question is, has anyone around the mics, has this happened to you guys? Have you ever had a situation where this happened and you wanted to continue something?
No, of course not. We just kill the games.
Well, that's generally what happens. Or you just step away from a game.
I have, yes.
And it's did not you happened do often. It? And was it successful? Did you like how it played out? I cannot see myself enjoying any of this because for the very reason that you said, I was at odds with what you said earlier, Dan, about if the GM has done such a good job that their world is bigger than themselves, then that's a credit to them. I take the exact opposite line of thinking in that I think it's almost a disservice to the GM if you are able to seamlessly pick up with somebody else and tell a story, then it's like you're then it didn't matter who was telling that story. It didn't really have anything, you know, there was no creativity that you were acknowledging that this person was able to give to it.
I agree.
I know that that's at odds, and right. But that's just the way I look at that.
Let me reply in two ways. The first is to say that if you're also recall, one of the things that I said in setting this up is the fact that some part of me thinks, doesn't the game belong to the game master? We're not talking copyrights or whatever.
No.
But I just mean just as a creative work.
Creative idea.
And therefore it's possible nobody really could pick it up quite the same way.
That's how I tend to feel
as well. And that leads to point two.
Agree with that statement, but go ahead.
Then that leads to point two, which is that the biggest word you use there that I object to, simply because I don't think anyone has suggested it, is seamlessly. All that I think we've posited is that it is possible with a transition period. And I think that that transition period and how it occurs and why it occurs is very important. And I've got some thoughts here on steps I think you can take to help mitigate some of the damage. But Chris, you said you outright disagreed, so I want to pass it off to you and give you a chance to hit on this before I move on.
Well, I disagree with that statement. When you say the term belong, I think that that is true up until the point the GM is done reading the introductory box text or however the setup is for that campaign. Because at that point, while the structure of it may be, the interpretation of what happens within that structure is driven, I think, in equal portion by the game master and the players. Because the GM may have his plot, the GM may have his overarching storyline, but how that actually gets to that point, all the pages in between this story, is just as much determined by the players as it is the GM. So it can't, the statement to belong as in meaning to wholly belong to the GM, that's not true to me. Well, after
okay,
a point.
So here's another thing I'm thinking of. I can see this if you're playing in an established setting, let's say like Greyhawk or like Dragonlance, something like that. If that's what you happen to be playing, you as a group are enjoying these characters. The GM decides I'm done. He's finished the storyline, but you guys still want to play those characters. I think that is a situation that is a lot easier because it's the world and the characters that you're enjoying. So somebody else can pick up the GM reins and go. I think what I'm having in trouble with is, and I don't know, and again, I'm not putting words in anyone's mouth here. This is just what I'm thinking.
Okay.
Is if you're talking about, especially say a homebrew setting where this is your world that the GM made up, or the GM decides to just leave in the middle of a story arc. You know, the big bad's still out there. You're halfway through this. You've been working on it. He's going to quit. And you decide, I still want to pick that up. That's what's giving me trouble. I think if it's just an existing setting, you're enjoying the characters, we're done with this big storyline, I want to continue playing these characters, let's go on with somebody else, I don't have a problem at all with that. I think that's, I can see doing that a lot easier than the other side of it.
I think a setting is a setting is a setting. Either players understand it or they don't. It doesn't matter if it's published or if it's homebrew or what. I think it's the story that the GM has is going to might trip people up. I think that if your story has like story arcs in it and the leaving GM can bring it to a good stopping point or a good handoff point, then that becomes really easy. Then it's just a matter of style and can you run a game in a style where everyone's going to be happy? Not necessarily the style of the former GM, not necessarily your style, just something that would make everyone happy. You have the same characters and stuff. I think that it gets really, really difficult if it's like you say, it's mid-mission, mid-quest, mid-campaign, mid-sentence, and the guy just up and leaves. If he has a whole bunch of notes and you're comfortable with notes, you might be able to get something out of that. If you're an improv GM, I think you'd even be fine still if you have an understanding of what's going on because you just roll with it. Now, his point A to point B, if you're an improv GM, will not be your point B. It will be something new that happens along the way. And that's fine because if the game is good and everyone's enjoying it, the players never knew what point B was anyway. And that might be a problem for somebody because, like, Wayne, for instance, loves resolution. He wants to know what happened. And now you have a game meta with two resolutions. You have the resolution of the original guy that you never got to play out. And then now you have the resolution of this current GM, which you are playing
out. You know, that probably would eat away at me.
Yeah.
I would want to know what the original ending was versus the new one. It would drive me crazy.
Chad, the situation that you described, yeah, I think I do agree with you. If it is a mid-sentence sort of ending, you know, then yeah, then you might have some problems. But if it is where you do one arc and then a new GM picks up the same characters, same setting, new arc, you know, that is a little bit easier transition. It still is, you know, you still can be fraught with pitfalls. I did something like that with one group, and me and this other GM, we would kind of go back and forth. You know the email chain that circulated where they had the boy write half the story and then the girl wrote half the story, and they were like completely different kind of things. You know, one thing was up in space with spaceships, and the other one was romance based.
What the hell are you talking about?
Do you remember the email chain where they had, like, it was a writing assignment by a teacher, and
okay,
half the story was written by the male student and the other half was written by the female student. They would pick up the story and then try and continue it along. You guys, come on, seriously, you guys don't remember this email
chain?
No,
I've never heard.
It's like the guy was talking about, you know, so-and-so captain on a space mission, and he was out in space, and he was thinking, you know, he was like off to go and save the world, and then like she took over and said, but on this world was his long-lost love, and she was thinking and missing him and all of that kind of stuff, and then they sued for peace or
whatever.
Is this
something that
then
happened in your mind?
This is what it was. An email chain. It was second of all, it was written on small slate boards.
This was a different battle company. No, I will find what I'm talking about, and I will email it to you so you can put the show notes. But the point is...
All right, go ahead.
The point is... Here's the point. The point is this GM and I, we flip-flopped back and forth. He ran an arc, I would go run an arc, and what ended up happening to my character in one of his plot arcs, I was extremely unhappy with. It wasn't that I made the effort to go and try and correct it when my arc came around, because I had a different idea in my head, but it bothered me in a setting that I had started. When he took over and started to run these characters, in my opinion, he messed it up, and he really kind of caused problems. And I was really upset about what he had done, particularly in my character.
And see, that's exactly kind of the thing I was talking about whenever, 10 minutes ago or so, the idea was brought up of, what if the GM doesn't leave, he just decides he's burned out and wants to start playing instead.
There has to be.
That's what you run into.
There has to be an agreement.
Yes. Well, yeah, and it's
bingo.
Like,
there has to be agreement of the GM saying, I'm handing all this off.
I no longer know the future.
And you know what?
Yeah, and I think that's going to be hard for a lot of people.
I don't think it's hard for people, because I hear stories of people doing stuff like this all the time, especially for a really long-running campaign. Somebody just says, hey, I'm burnt out, why don't you pick it up? The players are invested in the characters. The players are invested in the world. The players are invested in the story. I think that if somebody says, hey, I'm burnt out, I just want to play for a while, I think it's incumbent upon that person to bring certain levels of closure, or at least a wrap up, a good handoff point. But I think that people do this all the time. I don't, but I don't have a problem with
it. I have not done it all the time. I have done it a couple of times, and in every single case I have done it, it's not been because the GM left. It's because the GM wanted to pass it off for one reason or another. In fact, it's actually interesting, because in my Star Trek game, I'm actually contemplating offering some folks around the table, particularly my brother-in-law, and a swing at guest GMing because of the fact that I know that he would love doing it. And Pat, don't get me wrong. I think there is a really hard question you have to ask when doing this, which is, why are we doing this? Why aren't we just killing this and starting a new campaign? And the right answer for many situations, for many people, may be, it's time to kill the campaign, start something new, and just stop crying over spilled milk. This entire topic, I think, somewhat presupposes that you've arrived at a point where you so love your characters, you so love the plot, you're so in love with something, you just don't want to see it die, even if something as big as the GM stepping off that role has occurred. Mm-hmm. And I came up with 5 basic tips I've got for helping make this work. And you guys may have your own to add to this or disagree with ones I have.
I disagree.
Okay. That's all I got then. Thank you guys for that. All right. So my first point here is, I think the minute that this occurs, you need to take a little bit of downtime, reevaluate things, put the game on pause for a week, sit everyone down at the table and accept that, okay, this week we're not gaming, whether the GM's at the table, not at the table, good blood, bad blood, with notes, without notes, whatever the situation is, pause. Don't immediately keep going. You need a moment to rethink this. Something big has changed in the way this story is going to occur, and the group kind of needs to discuss that and comes to terms with that. Point 2, The conversation that needs to occur during that downtime is you need to basically take stock around the table and ask each person individually, we are keeping this game going because blank, and make them fill in that blank. What you get out of that is you now know what it is they were attached to and the things that you have to focus on to keep maintaining their expectations during that campaign. Because one thing, and maybe this is kind of a sub point too, that the players need to accept, this ain't the same guy. And as a result, this is not going to be exactly the same game. So let's refocus on, we're still going with this because we really were enjoying this. So as long as this is kept there, we can tolerate the other inconsistencies that may occur throughout this game. Point three is, if possible, talk to the old game master. Ask them, where was this headed? What was the truth about so-and-so or such-and-such? What were you planning to do with everybody's character? What secrets did you have going on the side? When you and Bob were passing those notes, what was written on them? And you don't even necessarily have to stick with it. I don't mean erase canon. You shouldn't do that. But if the game master's sticking on as a player, it's going to be really unhelpful if he knows all the twist turns in the end of the game.
And what were the clues that we as players missed?
Exactly. And get some idea of where they were going with it that you can sit down and rework to fit your style. Just as we said, the players need to accept this isn't the same GM. The game master needs to accept, I am not so-and-so. I can't run their game the exact same way. I'm not going to try to run their game the exact same way. But let me see what's there I can work with to keep the necessary consistency to keep this game rolling forward. Point four is, if possible, and Chad, this is one that you mentioned, look for pivot point. Mm-hmm. If the game master's still around, say, look, I know you're burnt out. Can you run one more game and just wrap up these three of the five loose ends, and then I'll deal with the other two? Can we come to the end of a chapter, the end of an episode, the end of a year in the campaign, something, so there's a logical reason for a new book to begin? If the game master is gone because they left, there's bad blood, whatever, you as the new game master can still try to create a pivot point by saying, okay, I'm going to real quickly tie up a few of these loose end plot points just to get them off my table so I can start replacing them with things that are my creation. Doesn't mean you have to get rid of all of them, but you're just going to narrow the stuff that's legacy versus the stuff that's new. And then last of all, if the old game master is still there, get over your bad self. When you gave up the seat, you gave up the seat.
Yeah.
And if they go somewhere with your NPCs you don't like, your favorite Baron von Badass is killed, your favorite plot point turns out where a different guy is actually the man in the shadows, tough. You gave it up when you gave it up, and you have to accept that it's not your game anymore. It's your game in the sense that as a player, you own some portion of it, but you are not the game master. You don't get to dictate where things are going. And if you can't handle that level of control, you just need to tell your group, look, I'm not comfortable with my campaign being run by anyone but me. I don't want to keep running it. Therefore, we need to start something new.
Yes. I agree. From what I read on forums and emails and stuff, I do think that there are a lot of people out there who run really long campaigns and they don't have a problem handing it off back and forth. I think the two main considerations is your group comfortable with this? And two, for the love of God, make a transition point.
Yes, if you know, at all
that
possible.
Is the most important thing that I think you can do. Instead of mid-quest, mid-mission, mid-sentence, all this stuff in the air, you don't have to tie up every single loose end. You don't have to fill in every plot. You don't have to. In fact, you really shouldn't resolve everything and end the campaign. But man, just a chapter, a story arc, just that time when all this stuff is going on, all this adventure and all this story is going on, and then that kind of comes to the point in any campaign where the characters are like, they can just take a breath going, okay, we got this covered. what's next? And with that logical point is a great time to hand it off.
Well, I liked your point. So one I might be a little concerned about is the convincing of the GM to see if he's able to run, you know, one last chapter or get it to some sort of logical stopping point. My only worry there is if he's already burnt out, be careful what you wish for, because you may not be happy with what he does. And at the very least, maybe you can get him to tell you this is what he was planning on doing so you can pick it up from that point if you're concerned about his level of enthusiasm going into that, you know, that final approach, that landing.
And I realize this depends on why the Game Master stepped down in the first place, but once again, presupposing the Game Master's still there, I think in most cases, if we're talking about real life drama, burnout, whatever, it's not the idea of running one more game that's getting to the Game Master. It's the idea of running and running and running. And if you say, look, can you just put your all into it. Give me one last hurrah for this game, and then you're done. You're clocked out. I think most reasonable people will be able to pull up their bootstraps and muscle their way through one more helping of vegetables. And I really have to think that.
And I think that if you do the...
That's three analogies in one phrase.
I think that under the alien abduction scenario, though, where you can't have that, it would almost be a good idea to kind of, instead of playing out the end, you just kind of do a talking wrap-up. Not, you know, you slay the dragon and rescue the princess, or you sink the battleship, or you free the planet, but just have a session where you guys kind of talk it out. It's like, okay, this is what happens, this is what happens, what would you guys do in this situation? You'd kind of do this, and you kind of accelerate the plot to where you can get to that. Not, again, not defeat the big bad and resolve everything, but just kind of accelerate out of the action zone so that the new guy can pick it up at a better point if it's at a bad point.
There's also the possibility that you can steer the game in ways you're more familiar with. What I mean by that is if throughout the course of the game there's a particular concept, the Game Master previously running the game was underutilizing or is really... something that you took more shine to than the Game Master did, change directions a little bit. For example, tomorrow, if Chad, you were to stop running your current game, could I keep going with exactly what you were doing? Probably not. I'd have to reinvent a lot of things. But if tomorrow you were to send the campaign south into the Badlands, I could run the game better than you could. Because I'm a better Game Master? No.
You invented it.
Because I invented it. Because I was the one in our collaborative writing who has created the entire culture and geography and whatever of those Badlands to the south, and therefore I know them better than you do. And so I may be tempted, if I was running the game, that, you know what, I'm going to push things towards the south where the southern edge of the human kingdoms, which were utterly wrecked by the invading armies, meet the beginning of the Badlands, because this is a piece of geography that I have spent more time thinking about than Chad has. Whereas Chad's plot, farther off to the north, is obviously something he's thought about more than I have. And so I will play to my expertise. And if you're playing in an established setting, you certainly have that opportunity, because there may be a faction or a city or a continent that you were more interested in than the other GM was. And so you just kind of, you know, find some reason to steer things off that direction.
And I think that's an important thing to note there. You have to find some reason, some logical reason, not some bull reason. There's nothing worse than, as a player, being in the middle of something and being and doing something that is interesting and fun, and all of a sudden the mists of Ravenloft come up around you, and suddenly you're bamf and you're like 1,000 miles away.
I like this planet better. Aliens abduct your characters, you're on this planet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That would be awful. Terrible.
There's a reason soap operas are mocked for their bad writing. Don't emulate them.
Yes. You have to be careful with the Deus Ex Machina approach of just deciding that it is going to be like this. There has to be a logical, reasonable flow. And the players, some of this is incumbent upon them to understand that this is a transition period and to help out with that. When, you know, the commander gives the mission to take the battle fleet this way out of the blue, that the players can't go, screw you, commander, I'm not taking this, we're headed this way and we were doing this all along and I can't believe you're changing the orders on us. It's just like, okay,
work with me a little.
Yeah It's like there's got to be a little give here so we can make this work.
And that give's got to last a little while too. I mean, yeah, that first session when you sit down with a new guy might be a little jarring, but you just, like a lot of TV shows, you can't judge it by the pilot episode. You got to give him a couple times to just kind of establish what he wants to
do. Players have to help their GMs out. In fact, I think we could do a whole episode on tips on how players can help their GM out.
I will convert you to my GM party yet.
Oh, no.
All I have
to do,
sir, is leave you in the GM seat long enough.
No. I have been in the GM seat for quite a while and in several different groups, and GMs are whiny bitches. They bog themselves down with all these books and all these rules and all these notes and all these dice.
Nooks and...
I know. That's all you need, man. That's all you need.
I thought love was all you needed.
And a little bit of love. A little bit of trust.
And a little bit and some dice.
Yeah. This next game coming up is going to be my grand experiment. Can I run the entire game off of my Nook? I will have no books, no dice, no nothing. I'll just have my hacked Nook.
I like how we're just an experiment to you.
You know, I have actually tried so many new and different things on you guys. I am constantly experimenting technique on you guys. Constantly.
Yeah, that's good. You're growing as a GM.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't try out new stuff, you don't grow. I mean, there comes a point where you're gratuitously experimenting, but there is a point as where you ought to experiment.
You know,
and
I was
yourself.
Even thinking about the...
No way, man. I'm keeping my blue graph paper until the day I
die. I know, Chris.
I was even thinking about the gratuitous part there, because I have this idea of this different kind of weird take on doing combat, and it's just like, man, I should do the next combat we do. I should do it. It's like, you know, the past three combats have been weird, different, out of the box things. Maybe we'll just run a straight up rules combat next time.
A dozen book stat and orcs attack us?
Holy crap.
Pat, put your pants back on.
All righty. I think we've got it. I think we.
Yes, that.
Yeah.
Well said.
So this is Sphere the Boot. We're signing out. Trust your GMs. Trust your players.
You know, after 200 somewhat episodes, it really is hard to come up with original ways to end the show, which is why I've largely given up trying. So thank you, Chad.
You're welcome.
It was very rough, but it worked, and the show's done. So
yes. See ya, Dan. Say see ya.
You cornered yourself.
What the hell?
The show is ending worse than it started. Oh, should I say later days? Then
no,
point?
Pat needs to say later days.
Later days.
Okay, but.
That's so awful.
I know.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2011. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.